A few years ago, a noted political observer referred to, I quote, the acceleration in the velocity of our history and the uncertainty of its trajectory. And I think we can agree that the current age is indeed one of expectations and hope, as well as a deepening contradictions and uncertainties. Let me begin this presentation by saying a few things about two forces which are shaping our lives today in major ways. One of them is population growth and its various ramifications, and the other one is changes in the global economy. And I like to say something about each of these. On population growth, it took tens of thousands of years for the world's population to break the 1 billion mark in the year 1800, and it has been growing at an exponential rate since then. We were 5 billion in 1990. We crossed the 6 billion mark in 2003, and it is expected by 2025 there will be something like 8 billion of us, and depending on one's assumptions about fertility rates and so on, by 2050 there should be somewhere between 9 and 10 billion people. The 2 billion additional people between the beginning of the century and 2025 are largely concentrated in developing countries. Indeed, something like 95% of that 2 billion increase is going to be in developing countries, virtually all of it in the cities. Of course, the first question that comes to mind after these figures is, what does this imply? I think it implies more demand for energy. Energy consumption by 2025 will have doubled. China is likely to have opened a new 1,000 megawatt power plant every month. We will need more energy for warmth, for food production, for illumination, for transportation. But of course, 2 billion more people by 2025 will mean a new demand for housing, for fresh water, for food, for waste management. And this means that there will be areas of potential stress. Infectious diseases are likely to be more prevalent because of the concentration of large populations in dozens of very large cities. And of course, we have the ongoing environmental challenges, to which I will come back in a few minutes, associated with the loss of tropical forest, fisheries depletion, biodiversity loss, water scarcity, and so on, all of which are in some way linked to increasing pressure on resources coming from population growth. In China, the urban population, which was 190 million people in 1980, was 420 million in the year 2000, and is likely to be a billion people by 2030. So not only do we have more people, but we have people wanting higher standards of living, who are increasingly restless and unsatisfied or unwilling to tolerate that, let's say, 20% of the world's population living in the 30 richest countries consume 85% of the world's goods and services. Let me add two or three footnotes to these comments on population growth. The first one is that these population forecasts are unlikely to change, since most future mothers who will have these children have already been born. Richard Cooper from Harvard University has written and said that, I quote, it would take extraordinary efforts of a nature and magnitude not generally contemplated to alter this demographic projection significantly, unquote. A second footnote is that obviously there are nuances to these trends. In Europe, in Japan, in Russia, there is likely to be negative growth for because of aging societies. And in fact, the issue of aging societies will affect even countries like China within a decade or so. And this will have also profound implications for pensions and other government entitlements, which for instance, are quite generous in Europe and are based on a pay-as-you-go system. Unfunded pension liabilities are huge, and it is not clear that in many countries taxes can rise beyond already fairly high levels. So this may lead in some countries to a renegotiation in the terms of the social contract, for instance, by significant increases in the retirement age. But this is, of course, never politically easy. And we have already seen in many European countries a reluctance on the part of governments and the population to agree to increases in the retirement age. There will be particular challenges in the Arab world where between the years 2000 and 2020, something like 100 million jobs needed to be created to maintain the rates of unemployment at then prevailing levels and to mitigate social and political consequences associated with the stresses linked to high unemployment. I guess an additional footnote pertains to the question whether we can feed an additional 2 or 3 billion people. And the answer to this question, at least as put forward by many, many experts, seems to be yes. Yields can rise further. They are well below best practice in many parts of the world. Genetic engineering can help us with diseases, with insects, drought-resistant plants, and so on. In fact, the scope for agriculture, for aquaculture, is considerable. Salmon, for instance, is not native to Chile, but the country has become one of the world's leading exporters of salmon. And this kind of innovation in the supply chain can of course be extended to other countries and to other products as well. Beyond population growth, there is the issue of changes in the global economy, and I would like to turn my attention to these now.